Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. We are still going through the Massachusetts debates. And actually, we really hit the Massachusetts debates perfectly as far as timing goes, because what we're going to be going forward with is that point of the convention in Massachusetts where the anti-federalists knew they had the upper hand and they had called for an accession and ratification of the Constitution. In other words, they were basically going to say, let's vote. Let's see how it falls out. And they knew that they had the upper hand. But before we get into the details of all of this, what we want to do is we want to remind you that this show was also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. And this really is the only show that goes through these types of details. The reason these details are so important is because what the Constitution is. The Constitution is a compact. It's not some, you know, tablet of guidance or like the Ten Commandments. And I make a lot of comparisons to the Ten Commandments in the Constitution because it's the supreme law of the land. But it's a lot more than just the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not, thou shalt not, thou shalt, and so forth. It actually creates a subordinate government to serve the Republic. And that subordinate government is really the child that has responsibilities in providing services and protections, and it is given power to do what it needs to do to accomplish those primary missions of maintaining security for the Republic, as well as providing for its general needs. Now, when I say general needs, I do not mean the needs of, you know, everyday items like food and water, sustenance, reading. Its responsibility in a general capacity is to ensure that the states are unfettered by external influences so that they can thrive in their autonomy and sovereignty. There is nowhere in the Constitution that it removes the sovereignty of the states. Its job is to support the sovereignty of the states. One of those things is the Commerce Clause, where the Commerce Clause was it was designed to create an equalizer to ensure that one state couldn't take a primary advantage over other states. And one of the ways they saw this at the very beginning, that certain states like Massachusetts, like New York, like Virginia and the Carolinas, and even Georgia, they were port states. They were on the coast. They had an advantage because shipping would come straight into them. Now, as you understand, the further south you go to landing on the United States, the longer it took for commerce to get there. So most of the preferable ports were up north. I mean, Virginia was considered a very critical port. And don't forget, you see lots of people passing around these little memes that the United States was created on its design of Christianity, that it was based upon this religious concept, and that's not true. Each state was developed for different purposes. Virginia, its purpose had really nothing to do with, you know, Christian or religious freedom or anything else. It was a commerce state. Its whole charter was based on allowing the plantations and the people there to have a little more freedom to develop commercial opportunities. Its focus was not, you know, like the Puritans in trying to be able to, you know, get away and maintain this very specific religion and creating a culture based on that. This is why these states had such diverse interests. When we talk about diverse, I mean, their interests were completely different. And their successes were completely different. At the time of the ratification of the Constitution, the average life expectancy in Massachusetts in the New England states was around 70 years old. It was much shorter in some of the southern states. And that's because of literacy, education, and the way they developed their culture. So these men from these different colonies or different sovereign states understood their differences were very vast. And, let's just say their differences were very hard to overcome. And this is why when one really looks at what they ended up doing in creating this Constitution and this Republic that really forced everybody to cooperate, you didn't have any more say anymore because the Articles of Confederation were going to go away, and this new government had the ability to direct tax. You don't pay up, they're coming for you, and they will collect. And who is it that's going to come for you? Well, it's going to be the militia. It'll be the militia of your own state, and if they refuse, then they will bring in the militia of other states, just like what they did in Pennsylvania in 1792 with the Whiskey Rebellion. So as you start looking at what these men had to do and what they were willing to do, they were willing to put aside their differences and self-interest because they had just witnessed 6 years of states aggrandizing themselves and maintaining their little fiefdoms so that they could continue to thrive while the Union itself was going to be put asunder, where the European nations who we owed money to were going to come in and decimate this new formed republic or this Union. And so this is why Madison, this is why these men understood going into this debate in Pennsylvania that they had to put aside the interests of their states. You know, Governor Randolph was in this meeting, and Virginia was very much on board with putting aside the fiefdoms of the states and allowing the necessary powers be delegated. So as we looked at the last 2 days of the Massachusetts debate, it seemed like the majority of the issues that they had was that they were giving away too much power. They didn't even get into a lot of the details, even though they read the line by line. This is one of the states that actually read line by line. They glossed over a lot of things that got into details in North Carolina, Virginia, and New York. And I'm here to tell you that what they were more concerned about was that common, you know, adage of, you know, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And they felt that this new nation was going to have all of these absolute powers. But some of the things that they were leaning on and claiming, like they were going to create this huge tax collection agency, they completely glossed over the fact that all enforcements, all of the executions of the laws of the Union were going to be executed by the militia. So what was their fear? What was their, you know, why were they so afraid of these collectors? This was themselves. You have to understand, people, that the militia is us. It was the greatest check and balance put within this Constitution, giving we the people the ultimate say on whether these laws were just and whether these laws should be enforced or whether they shouldn't be enforced. Kind of interesting, right? Especially when you see all of the different checks and balances that we see within this. So anyway, one of the things I also want to remind you real quick is we have our comment line, 425-270-5416. And hey, we've actually been getting comments, but nothing really for the show. People calling to, you know, how do I get involved? What do I need to do? How can I help? And this is awesome. We've gotten a hold of a patriot in Missouri that called and said, hey, what do I need to do? And I've pointed that patriot towards the two things I'm telling you to go to, the National Liberty Alliance and the Constitution Party. Get involved with these grassroots organizations. Now, while you're getting involved, we do want you to start understanding the Constitution and Republic Review, because within both of these organizations, we need people to help articulate and help other people within these organizations at the local level, in Missouri or whatever state you're in, to start understanding the importance of Republic Review, getting the states to step forward and take control of the general government. If we don't do it, Biden will do anything and everything he thinks he can get away with because, oh, well, shoot, he won the election. That means that he has a mandate to do whatever. In other words, we've elected a king that has all powers and he's not limited by the Constitution. What crazy world are we living in? Where in the heck does the president have these types of powers? More importantly, where in the heck does Congress think that they can start writing legislation to change our voting laws? Where do they have that power in the Constitution? They don't. And so they're overstepping their bounds. And this whole thing of packing the courts. My friends, if we do not get started with Republic Review, and I will tell you, I had this conversation just recently with somebody regarding this lawsuit with Bob Schultz. It is still out there. We're still waiting for the summary judgment. We believe that the court will look at this as an opportunity to shut down the Biden administration if we can get some district attorneys engaged. But we've got ratification debates to go through. This is content time. So when we come back, we're going to dive into the details of the Massachusetts ratification debates and where we are as the ratification of the Constitution overall right after these two promos. If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and their 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADD-LOCAL or visit them on the web at www.addlocal.com. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with Republic Review, they can enforce compliance to their Constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so where are we now? So like I'm setting the stage here, they're at a point where the anti-federalists realize that they have an overwhelming number. They've done a consensus. They are going to defeat this Constitution. It seemed pretty clear that there were a lot of anti-federalists, and I provided a lot of the perspectives because there wasn't really good Federalist comments. And as a matter of fact, the unique thing about the Massachusetts debates is that it was really more of a religious tone, and we would be getting into that as how these men start arguing for it in more of a religious perspective than in a, you know, limited defined powers and those types of things. I mean, they do kind of touch on that, but let's look at the states that have ratified already. Delaware, one of the smallest states in the Union, one of the smallest states in the Union, along with Georgia and along with Providence, Rhode Island. Now, if you look at Pennsylvania, who had just ratified before Massachusetts as well, they were a big player. They had over 400,000 people as citizens in the state of Pennsylvania. But they didn't have access to a major port and throughput. They were producers of agricultural products, cheese and beef and, you know, butter, those types of things, as well as agricultural. But they didn't have the means of shipping it out and bringing it back in. So they were really dependent upon, this is one of the few states that wasn't on the coast. I mean, I think the very small southeast corner of Pennsylvania had access to, you know, the river to get to the sea, and the boats were small enough back then, but it was still a longer time frame of getting, you know, produce as well as agriculture and other things in and out of Pennsylvania. So Pennsylvania was really more dependent upon states like New York and or New Jersey and or Delaware or Virginia. If you look at the other states, such as New Jersey, which was a small population, but even though they were a coastline population, they weren't as developed. So Massachusetts comes along, and they're almost 400,000. Look how small that state is. Look at 400,000 fit into just a fraction of Pennsylvania. So you see the population center and the density is much greater there. Here's the first state that was considered the one of the top leaders of the, you know, the, like the 25 percentile of power states in this new union. And so here was the opportunity for a first lead state, because the other lead states would have been Virginia, would have been New York, and would have been North Carolina. Now, I'm just telling you that something was afoot. And John Hancock, as we kind of talked about this, John Hancock was aware of this. He was aware of the consensus and the pending doom. And so what ends up happening is they all come back in, and after there was a call, a motion on the floor to count the accession and for the ratification of this Constitution. And at that point, and this is, I'm going to read it exactly how it's written here. When the convention met in the afternoon, His Excellency, the President, observed that a motion had been made and seconded that this convention do assent to and ratify the Constitution which had been under consideration, and that he had in the former part of the day intimated his intention of submitting a proposition to the convention. My motive, says he, arises from my earnest desire to this convention, my fellow citizens, and the public at large, that this convention may adopt such a form of government as may extend its good influence to every part of the United States and advance the prosperity of the whole. His situation, His Excellency said, had not permitted him to enter into the debates of this convention. And I already told you that the real reason for that was because he was suffering from gout, so he really wasn't present for most of the debates. It, however, appeared to him necessary from what he had been advanced in them to adopt the form of government proposed. but observing a diversity of sentiment in the gentlemen of the convention. He had frequently had conversations with them on the subject, and from this conversation, he was induced to propose them whether the introduction of some general amendments would not be attended with the happiest of consequences. For that purpose, he should, with leave of the Honorable Convention, submit to their consideration a proposition in order to remove the doubts and quiet the apprehensions of gentlemen. And if, in any degree, the object should be acquired, he should feel himself perfectly satisfied. He should therefore submit them, for he was, he said, unable to go more largely into the subject. If his abilities would permit him, relying on the candor of the convention, to bear him witness that his wishes for a good constitution were sincere. His Excellency then read his proposition. This, gentlemen, concluded His Excellency, is the proposition which I had to make, and I submit to your consideration with the sincere wish that it may have a tendency to promote a spirit of union. Now, they kind of glossed over all of it. The proposition submitted by His Excellency had been committed to a large committee who reported some amendments. We think it expedient to refer the reader of the form of ratification for it. And guess what? The leader against the Constitution at that point in time, or the most influential man that was not supporting the ratification of the Constitution, was the Honorable Mr. Adams. Now, when I say the Honorable Mr. Adams, I'm not talking about John Adams. John Adams was overseas at the time. I believe he was in Holland trying to work out, you know, continued finance or begging leave because we haven't paid them. Adams was gone. Adams was not a part of the Constitutional Convention. Well, at least John Adams. This we're talking about is Samuel Adams. And so this is what Mr. Adams says. Mr. President, I feel myself happy in contemplating the idea that many benefits will result from Your Excellency's conciliatory proposition to this Commonwealth and to the United States. And I think it ought to precede the motion made by the gentleman from Newburyport, and to be at this time considered to be by the convention. I have said that I have had my doubts of this Constitution. I could not digest every part of it as readily as some gentlemen. But this, sir, is my misfortune, not my fault. Other gentlemen have had their doubts, but in my opinion, the proposition submitted will have a tendency to remove such doubts and to conciliate the minds of the convention and the people without doors. This subject, sir, is of the greatest magnitude and has employed the attention of every rational man in the United States. But the minds of the people are not so well agreed on it as all of us could wish. A proposal of this sort coming from Massachusetts, from her importance, see, I'm just showing you here, he recognizes the importance of Massachusetts, will have its weight. 4 or 5 states have considered and ratified the Constitution as it stands. But we know there is a diversity of opinion even in these states, and one of them is greatly agitated. If this convention should particularize the amendments necessary to be proposed, it appears to me it must have weight in other states where conventions have not yet met. I have observed the sentiments of gentlemen on the subject as far as Virginia, and I have found that the objections were similar in the newspapers and in some of the conventions. Considering these circumstances, it appears to me that such a measure will have the most salutary effect throughout the Union. It is of the greatest importance that America should still be united in sentiment. I think I have not heretofore been unminded of the advantage of such a union. it is essential to the people that they should be united in the federal government to withstand the common enemy and to preserve their valuable rights and liberties. We find in the great state of Pennsylvania, 1/3 of the convention are opposed to it. Should then there be a large minorities in the several states, I should fear the consequences of such disunion. Now, as we go through this and they talk about the benefits and the, you know, the overall unified need to protecting the union, you know, the thing that's running in the back of my head is this invasion that we are facing that the very few elect. There's if you go throughout the union today and say, do we believe that allowing illegal aliens to just come across our border and to invading us, this is a good thing for us? No way. No way, no how. Anyway, with that, what we'll do is we are going to return to John Adams' comments, and because I got another little paragraph, and then we'll move forward into some more really important comments. We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, so the last comments, he actually makes a lot more. But what I'm trying to show you is, first off, he understands the importance of Massachusetts as a leader in the union. He also understands the importance of having a government that has the necessary energies, the powers to be able to do what it needs to do. He understands that the Articles of Confederation are a complete failure. He, as he comes right out and says, he doesn't understand this Constitution, but that is not his fault. It is more of his misfortune. And so his final comments that I'm going to read is this. Sir, there are many parts of it I esteem as highly valuable, particularly the article which empowers Congress to regulate commerce, to form treaties, and etc. For want of this power in our national head, our friends are grieved and our enemies insult us. Now, this power to regulate commerce means that there is a unified form, which is the federal government, the new general government, will have the power to regulate commerce. Currently, the states, you know, are trying to undermine, and there has been a constant tug of war in trying to negotiate commerce trades. And to be honest with you, other nations and other trading companies have been taking advantage of the United States by playing one state against another, against the Continental Congress, because it has already been brought up in the Pennsylvania debates that Continental Congress does not have the ability to actually enforce its treaties. And so it is a huge quagmire in trying to create, you know, some uniform trading or the flow of commerce, the regulating of commerce coming in and going out. This is why the term regulate commerce was so important to them as a flow of commerce out and a flow of commerce into the states. It had nothing to do with the federal government's ability to regulate the products that you make, to regulate the crops that you grow. They had no internal influence within the states regarding commerce. But over time, they convinced the states to allow them to do this by hoodwinking and by coming in and using the court to aggrandize their controls over us. And they have been running rickshaw over us for a long time over this. Our ambassador at the Court of London is considered as a mere cipher instead of the representative of the United States. Therefore, it appears to me that a power to remedy this evil should be given to Congress and the remedy applied as soon as possible, because the states are, like I said, they are being taken advantage of. And all of these other nations knew it, and they have been exploiting it. Now, going back, here is Mr. Adams once again. Now, so as we look at this, President Hancock made this suggestion. He wanted to make these amendments. And then Adams, what I just read to you was his reply. Now, the next day, Friday, February 1st, Mr. Bowdoin speaks, and then Mr. Adams speaks again. And this is basically picking up where Mr. Adams starts to speak on the following day. As Your Excellency was pleased yesterday to offer for the consideration of this convention certain propositions intended to accompany the ratification of the Constitution before us, I did myself the honor to bring them forward by a regular motion, not only from the respect due to Your Excellency, but from a clear conviction in my own mind that they would tend to affect the salutary and important purposes which you had in view. Quote, the removing the fears and quieting the apprehensions of many of the good people of this commonwealth, and the more effectually guarding against an undue administration of the federal government. Close quote. I beg leave, sir, more particularly to consider those propositions, and in a few words, a very few words, to express my own opinion that they must have a strong tendency to ease the minds of gentlemen who wish for the immediate operation of some essential parts of the proposed Constitution, as well as the most speedy and effectual means of attaining alterations in some parts of it, which they are solicitous should be made. I will not repeat the reasons I offered when the motion was made, which convinced me that the measure now under consideration will have more speedy as well as more certain influence in effecting the purpose last mentioned than the measure proposed in the Constitution before us. Your Excellency's first proposition is, and now he's basically going to quote some of these things here, that it be explicitly declared that all powers not expressly delegated to Congress are reserved to the several states to be by them exercised. In other words, here's the First Amendment that John Hancock provided, which was the 10th Amendment that we know today. And everybody, every state, as I've told you this before, at the ratification, and all states beyond Massachusetts, all of them included that one amendment. And when it came down to the time for the Bill of Rights, that one amendment, as well as the 9th Amendment, both of those amendments were unanimous. Every state requested that nugatory restriction placed into the Bill of Rights so that the federal government understood that they did not have power to exercise any power that was not formally delegated or expressly delegated to Congress. Those were to be reserved to the states. Anyway, Mr. Adams goes on, "This appears to my mind to be a summary of a Bill of Rights, which gentlemen are anxious to obtain. It removes a doubt which many have entertained respecting the matter and gives assurance that if any law made by the federal government shall be extended beyond the power granted by the proposed Constitution and inconsistent with the Constitution of this state, it will be an error and adjudged by the courts of law to be void. It is consonant with the second article in the present Confederation that each state retains its sovereignty, freedom, and independence, and every power, jurisdiction, or right which is not by this Confederation expressly delegated to the United States in Congress assembled. I have long considered the watchfulness of the people over the conduct of their rulers the strongest guard against the encroachments of power, and I hope the people of this country will always be thus watchful." Now, let me take a quick second here. And just so you understand, as we look at what is going on and how the Bill of Rights were immediately injected and how he just framed this limitation, if it is not expressly delegated in the Constitution, the federal government has no authority to meddle with it. So let me ask you, sexual orientation, sexual deviation, relationships, marriage, what have you, where is marriage, sexual identity, gender? Is there any power delegated to the federal government over these matters? Is there? Or any powers delegated to the general government in the relationship of religion, whether it be the establishment or the doctrine, the teachings of doctrines, the restrictions of doctrines? Is there any power over religion within the Constitution and its ratified amendments? No. And yet we see a federal government that is delving and controlling both of these, religion, marriage, identity, the orientation, all of those types of things. Let me be clear, because we see all of this legislation coming from D.C., that D.C. has exclusive legislative powers for D.C. and its territories only. It can make any law that it wants for the District of Columbia and its territories. However, any of those laws, if they are not amended or within the powers delegated in the Constitution, they have no constitutional standing in the states. So what I'm telling you, and I've said this before, the Civil Rights Act of 1964, as good as it is and as cherished as I cherish that the meaning and the essence of the Civil Rights Act, it has no constitutional standing in any state. Because is there anything regarding race, regarding any of those protections and or statuses within the Constitution? Does the Constitution have and has delegated the power to regulate race, relationships, and discrimination of those types of things? No, they're not there. Now, when we look at the right of protection from, you know, illegal search and seizure, the right to bear arms, your right of expression, your religious expression, those types of things, yeah, that's clear in the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. And so when we look at the ADA and a lot of these laws that have been passed that we're following, we have been drinking the Kool-Aid, because the federal government has gotten to a point where we believe they can do anything, and they can't. That's the whole point of reading these. This is the empirical academic data. We'll be right back after this.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. I mean, what's more important, looking at the barrage and attacks against the Constitution, whether it be regarding our voting rights that they're going to trample upon, our right to bear arms and actually enforcing our ability to enforce the Constitution? Look at what they're doing. And if you do not understand why they can't do it, this is what the ratification debates are all about. We are getting the framers clarifying and defining the Constitution and its limitations. Anyway, as we move forward, this is what Mr. Adams says again. Another of your Excellency's propositions is calculated to quiet the apprehensions of gentlemen, lest Congress should exercise an unreasonable control over the state legislatures with regard to the time, place, and manner of holding elections, which by the fourth section of the first article are to be prescribed in each state by the legislature thereof, subject to the control of Congress. I have had my fears lest this control should infringe the freedom of elections, which ought ever to be held sacred. Gentlemen who have objected to this controlling power in Congress have expressed their wishes that it be restricted to such states as may neglect or refuse that power vested in them and to be exercised by them if they please. Your Excellency's purposes in substance Your Excellency proposes in substance the same restriction which I should think cannot be met with their full approbation. The power to be given to Congress to lay and collect taxes, duties, and imposts and excises has alarmed the minds of some gentlemen. They tell you, sir, that the exercise of power of laying and collecting direct taxes might be greatly distress the several states and render them incapable of raising monies for the payment of their respective debts or for any purpose. They say the impost and the excise may be made adequate to the public emergencies in the time of peace, and ask why the laying direct tax may not be confined to a time of war. You are pleased to propose to us that it be a recommendation that, quote, Congress do not lay direct taxes, but when the monies arising from the impost and excises shall be insufficient for the public exigencies. The prospect of approaching war might necessarily create an expense beyond the productions of imposts and excises. How then would the government have the necessary means of providing for the public defense? Must they not have recourse to other resources besides imposts and excises? The people, while they watch for their own safety, must and will have a just confidence in a legislature of their own election. The approach of war is seldom, if ever, without observation. It is generally observed by the people at large. And I believe no legislature of a free country would venture a measure which should directly touch the purses of the people under a mere pretense, or unless they could show to the people's satisfaction that there had been, in fact, a real public exigency to justify it. Your Excellency's next proposition is to introduce the indictment of a grand jury before any person shall be tried for a crime by which he may incur infamous punishments or loss of life, and as it is followed by another which recommends a trial by jury in civil actions between citizens of different states, if either of the parties shall request it. These and several others which I have mentioned are so evidently beneficial as to need no comment of mine, and that they are all in every particular of such a general nature and so equally interesting to every state that I cannot help persuade myself to think they will all readily join with us in the measure proposed by Your Excellency. If we should now adopt it, gentlemen may make additional propositions if they think fit. It is presumed that we shall exercise candor towards each other, and that whilst on the one hand, gentlemen will cheerfully agree to any proposition intended to promote a general union, which may not be inconsistent with their own mature judgment, others will avoid the making such as may be needless or tend to embarrass the minds of the people of this Commonwealth and our sister states, and thereby not only frustrate Your Excellency's wise intention, but endanger the loss of that degree of reputation which I flatter myself this Commonwealth has justly sustained. Well, see, he is very well aware of the fact that the state of Massachusetts has a reputation. Now, as we move forward, a gentleman by the name of Mr. Nason gets up a little bit after Mr. Adams, and he makes some anti-federalist comments as to, you know, why we can't do this, we can't move forward, hold on here. And so I want to share this with you, because here is an insight as to the fact that, you know, the anti-federalists were still digging in their heels in trying to stop the ratification, in trying to invoke fear of something, in some cases, that did not exist. In other words, they were really jumping to conclusions, because just remember, when they talked about the direct collection of taxes, there were many people that felt that a standing army would be created. Well, the Constitution's clear that all the execution of all laws was to be done by the militia, not by a standing army, that the militia was the standing army when federalized. So how was the protections or this check placed upon the federal government, where we, the people, had the ultimate say of whether we're going to enforce something or not. These things were lost, and these men did not really get into this. But let me just kind of move forward. We've got about 4 minutes, and I will try to go as far as I can in this before we conclude and get into tomorrow's, hopefully, the final reading for what we have in the Massachusetts ratification debate. So this is, again, Mr. Nason on February 1st. The eighth section, Mr. President, provides that Congress shall have the power to lay and collect taxes, duties, imposts, excises, etc. We may, sir, be poor. We may not be able to pay these taxes, etc. We must have a little meal and a little meat whereon to live, and save a little for a rainy day. But what follows? Let us see. To raise and support armies. Here, sir, comes the key to unlock this cabinet. Here is the means by which you will be made to pay taxes. Now, see, he's pointing to this army that's going to be formed, but it is the federalization of the militia, that Congress shall have the power to call forth the militia to execute the laws of the Union. This is where they have to create the federalized army. They're not going to be able to create a king's army. Anyway, moving on. But will ye, my countrymen, submit to this? Suffer me, sir, to say a few words on the fatal effects of standing armies. That the bane of the republic governments, a standing army, was it not with that Caesar passed the Rubicon and laid prostrate the liberties of this country? By this have 7/8 of the once free nations of the globe been brought into bondage. Time would fail me were I attempt to recapitulate the havoc made in the world by standing armies. Now, in all good perspectives here, folks, the reason the federal government has standing armies is because they've convinced us that the Constitution empowers them when it doesn't. If we enforce the Constitution, the IRS, the BLM, the ATF, the FBI, all of these enforcement agencies go away because they have no constitutional standing. We have to delegate the power for them to be able to execute those laws independent of the militia. Currently, Article 1, Section 8, Subsection 15 states that Congress will have the power to call forth the militia to execute the laws of the Union. There's nowhere else that Congress has the power to create a FBI, an ATF, an IRS in executing the laws of the Union. That is a sole responsibility of we the people, because all the framers understood the evils of a standing army. As they go through this in Virginia, this really gets shaken out. We will prove this to you. Britain attempted, going on, this is what Mr. Nason said. Britain attempted to enforce her arbitrary measures by a standing army. But, sir, we had patriots then who alarmed us of our danger, who showed us the serpent and bade us beware of it. Shall I name them? I fear shall offend your excellency, but I cannot avoid it. I must. We had a Hancock, an Adams, and a Warren. Our sister states, too, produced a Randolph, a Washington, a Greene, and a Montgomery, who led us in our way. Some of these have given up their lives in defense of the liberties of this country. And my prayer to God is that when this race of illustrious patriots shall have bid adieu to the world, and actually, I'm going to go back, and we'll pick this up when he starts naming names in our next episode, because I think that that's pretty powerful, where he actually starts poking everybody in the eye. Anyway, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help, and we're giving you the evidence of what we have to do and why we need to initiate Republic Review. God bless. Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing.